You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, he's here. And Callan Butenoff coming to you live from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Lots coming up for you on the show today. After the 9:30 news, our friend and colleague, he hosts Amicus, a law review on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the network. It is a great show. Mm-hmm. Jim Santel will be joining us to talk all things legal. There were all kinds of arguments before the Supreme Court yesterday about the tariffs and the tariff situation.
This week is very interesting.
It has been.
It is. I feel like this is going to be a week we're going to be talking about for maybe the next year and some change.
Lots going on.
Yeah.
Lots going on. So Jim Santel joining us after 9:30. In hour number two, we'll lighten things up for Audio Sorbet after the 10:30 news. We'll talk all things sports balls. The Acme Packing Company's Paul Noonan will be here, and we'll wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Cat Burglar edition, so stick around for that. A couple of breaking news items as we come on the air this morning. Nancy Pelosi, the California Democratic representative, the first woman ever to serve as Speaker of the House, has announced she will retire from Congress. 2 years after stepping down from House leadership, she is now Speaker Emeritus.
Yes, Speaker Emerita.
Speaker Emerita.
I had to look that up, and there's like special requirements. You have to serve for more than two terms. You have to have stepped down. There's a whole host of things, but she is Speaker Emerita.
Emerita. So we'll talk a little bit more about Nancy Pelosi and Nancy Pelosi's legacy at the top of next hour. The other breaking news that we want to start with, this is from CBS News. Layoffs soared in October to their highest for the month in 22 years.
Yeah.
22 years. Employers have announced early 1.1 million job cuts this year. The most through October since 2020 when the pandemic hit and everything had to shut down.
Yeah. And what I said earlier, like a minute or two ago, about this being I feel like this is a week we should like mark on the calendar because between the election, which we're going to talk more about today, and we'll be talking more about in the coming weeks and the years and forever. But this week with the elections being so decisive on, and I don't even, I hesitate to call it a blue wave. I don't like that term because it's
overused.
I think what it was an overwhelming message from the voters of this country that certain viewpoints, certain, you know, the MAGA movement isn't as beloved as we are made to think by the, like, whether it's Speaker of the House, whether it's the president, whether it's Caroline Leavitt. My short version of this is that what we've seen through elections, and I think what hopefully people will see from the job numbers, is that this is the wrong direction. I honestly don't want to say conservative. I want to say liberal. I don't want to say this or that. I just want to say the message that we need to be crafting and pushing forward is a message that is actually pro-democracy, pro-business for all, not billionaires, but like small business. I think that you saw candidates come out, give messages of hope and uniting and America and all the good things, all those good things, and the way people hooked onto that and voted for them and voted against authoritarianism or people who cozy up with authoritarianism. I'm hoping that I hope that those who may be on the fence of what this country is about with regard to MAGA, as we've spoken up about before, will do some really heavy duty thinking this week, but also just these jobs numbers too. You can't spin these job numbers into something great.
That this is a good thing.
You can't say that this is the greatest economy ever when we are consistently losing jobs.
Andy Challenger, a workplace expert and chief revenue officer for Challenger, Gray & Christmas, said that October's pace of job cutting was much higher than average for the month. Some industries are correcting after the hiring boom of the pandemic, but this comes as AI adoption, softening consumer and corporate spending, and rising costs drive belt tightening and hiring freezes. And I think the vote on Tuesday, the results of the Tuesday election, are also an indication that the Trump administration and the president himself going out there on a daily basis saying groceries are down is not resonating. People have their own lived experience when they go to the grocery store. Groceries are not down. And I also want someone to ask our president why he is so enamored with that word. He says groceries is an old-fashioned word. Like, he's never, what else do we call them?
A sack of stuff.
I guess. I find that really interesting.
And so that's where I will pose the question or challenge. I mean, this time last year, we were in a deep funk. This time last year, we found out that President Trump had been reelected or sent to, I should say, reelected.
Yeah.
But one of the things we discussed in the months prior to the election was the fact that on paper, from a technical standpoint, the economy was in good shape. The stock market was growing. The jobs were going, job numbers were good. All the economic indicators that show a positive growing economy were there. And we had talked about it a lot. One of the things, and I'm going to put this on me, is I did not pay a lot of attention to, or I shouldn't say pay attention to, I didn't say on the air, was that the kitchen table economy was a different discussion. And we kept hearing about egg prices. We kept hearing about grocery prices. We kept hearing about—
which were all valid.
Which were all valid. And we had a growing economy that was supported by the numbers, and yet people didn't believe that, choosing to look at their own economy, their personal economy, as to why they may have made the choice they did at the ballot box this time last year. My question is, now we look at it again. Grocery prices are still not going down. Gas prices are fluctuating. Like, it was 240 something last week. It's 299 where I live.
Yeah.
And
energy prices are also not going down.
Energy prices are not going down, and they're not going to go down. And then on top of that, the stock market's always going to do, it's always going to correct itself. It's always going to adapt. But we're seeing the economic indicators of a bad economy. So will you make the choice to say, all right, with all those personal economic things and with the national economy, where do you stand? Where, can you keep listening to the president saying it's a great economy and believe him? And if so, why?
Well, and again, he says it now almost every day. Groceries are down. Groceries are not down.
No, they're not.
No matter how many times you say that out loud, that does not make it so. I'm sorry, you're not Captain Picard.
Nice reference.
Right?
I mean, it's very true. And you can't keep, and he also keeps saying this is the greatest economy
in the history of the world. In the history of history.
I need to understand, who are you basing that against? Rome, Greece, Genghis Khan? I have to understand where your comparisons come from. But the
Genghis economy was really something.
He conquered a lot.
Yeah, got a lot done.
But that's the thing is like last year we had a good growing economy, but people didn't want to believe it because of their personal lives. I understand that. But now we have an economy that's downturning pretty hard. And we are getting that from independent, like, there are all sorts of individuals saying that this economy is not going well for Americans right now. On top of that, your kitchen table economy is still not great. So now I ask you, how much longer can you listen to a president completely lie to our faces about these issues that he, one, knows nothing about? He knows nothing about.
He really doesn't.
And two, continually puts a strain on you and your family.
Well, and essentially, and we'll talk more about this with Jim Santel when he joins us, but the Trump administration lawyer yesterday in addressing the Supreme Court essentially admitted that tariffs are taxes on the American people.
We heard Scott Bessent say it. He had to make that announcement. Like, they have to be dragged kicking and screaming into a point that a lot of people already know. Or if they didn't know, they're explained the information. And they go, oh, that makes sense. You as a taxpayer pay for the tariffs.
We all pay for the tariffs. Yes,
period.
We do. You can join us at 855-752-4842. If you'd like to check in on this, Cindy from Appleton is on the line. Good morning, Cindy. What did you want to say about this?
Well, you're right, Kel. The economy was humming. We had great numbers before this moron who's not in charge got elected. But the thing that bothers me is that he is really taking us down quickly. I just wonder if there's any statistics that show how fast our economy has crashed since the president took office over the history, because it's going down and it's going down fast, just like the Titanic.
Yeah. I guess one thing that has surprised me, Cindy, and thank you for checking in with us. One thing has surprised me is the speed with which they have implemented a large part of Project 2025. Mm-hmm. That's happened really quickly.
And I
did not expect this much to have gotten done this soon in his second term.
I've heard anywhere between 30-40% have been implemented by this point. And yeah, we're not even a full year into his first term of his second administration. And really, I don't want to do I told you so, but we talked about it over and over and over again. But again, sometimes people are busy. People are living their lives. They're worrying about what's happening to their families. So a 900-page document can maybe sometimes fly over people's head, or they want to chalk up to.
That doesn't affect me. Well, and it's not going to affect
and,
me.
And also, even from the purest of hearts, it's America. That won't happen here. We're tougher than that. But he wants to do those things, but he has. He is, in his first term, he surrounded himself with, quote, experts. And people,
all the best people.
But really, like, when you think about the people he surrounded himself with, he surrounded himself with guardrails. He didn't know he was doing that, but he surrounded himself with business experts. And those business experts said, you can't do these things. And they all left. Now it is sycophants, yes men, and people who will do anything to implement their way of law, their way of living in this country, up to and including getting that guy in charge again, who doesn't care about the policies. He wants the adulation. And adulation is coming from good or bad. All press is good press to him. It doesn't matter if they love him or hate him. He's standing on the White House lawn, thumbs up, saying the economy is great, even though all the experts are saying, what economy are you looking at?
And Ronnie from Horicon just texted in, listening on WAUK. Don't forget, you also need ID to buy groceries, according to the president.
Yeah.
He said that yesterday, that you need ID when you go to the grocery store and you need ID when you go to get gas. I didn't realize that. I just gassed up the other day and they didn't ask me for my ID.
I did get ID'd recently, though, when I bought some beer, and that felt really nice.
Did you say thank you?
I was like, ooh, you think I'm pretty? But yeah, I mean, that's the really harmful thing too, Jane, is that he says those things and then the media outlets that worship him then say it more and more and use it as points of argument over and over and over until some people who don't know better going, wait, I heard you did need your ID to grocery. Someone told me that you needed an ID. When did that happen? And then you have to say, that was never a thing.
That's why Civic Media is here.
Oh, hi, everybody. Civic Media here to give you some truthies.
We're going to continue our conversation. We have lots of comments coming in on the live stream. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Board Lord, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us. Call or text. The number is the same at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Off the top, starting off the show, we talked about some breaking news. Layoffs across the U.S. soared last month to over 153,000. That is the worst October for job cuts in 22 years. Employers have announced 1.1 million job cuts this year, the most through October of 2020, when the pandemic sent the unemployment numbers skyrocketing. So we're talking about jobs and prices. Donald Trump, of course, yesterday announced great news. Walmart just announced prices for Thanksgiving dinner down 25%.
Oh, we did it, everybody.
We did it since under sleepy, crooked Joe Biden at 2024. Affordability, says Donald Trump, is a Republican stronghold. One little caveat.
Yeah.
The 2025 Walmart Thanksgiving meal has 15 items. The 2024 meal had 21 items.
Well, you still get great quality items, high quality
and
brand name.
Almost all the brand names from last year have been replaced with generics.
Oh.
So there's a little bit of a little switching out there. Details, Greg.
Details matter.
It's all in the details.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brandon on the live stream said, don't forget when we're talking about the culture wars. Yep, I'll take that down.
Thank you.
don't forget the role that culture wars played in the election.
Yeah.
Which is an important thing to remember.
Well, it's always...
it was all the demonizing of the others. It was the others and the others and Haitian immigrants and all immigrants and trans people and drag queens.
I think if you take all the immigrants in this country, whether they're here documented or undocumented, you put them together with all the trans people in this country, and you put them together with anyone else they wanted to other throughout last year, they still don't equal the amount of people who are affecting our taxes going up and being given directly to the billionaires. I don't know many trans people who are making money off of my tax dollars. I don't know Haitian immigrants who are, reworking legislation so they can get forever tax cuts. We've talked about this before over and over again. They want us to dislike each other. They want us to not trust each other when really, when it comes down to us, most of us as Americans and most of us who live in this country are in the same boat, essentially. Well, this is not about, and I don't even want to say us versus them. This is just the people that you've been taught to fear, the people you've been taught to not trust, are going through the same thing you are.
For the most part. The vast majority of us are much closer to needing food stamps than we are close to being billionaires.
Yes.
We're much, much closer to one medical crisis or one catastrophe from bankruptcy.
Yeah.
We're much closer to that than being ultra wealthy.
Yeah. The moment they made it about citizenship and about race and about religion and the moment they made us dislike each other and distrust each other on those measures, that's how they are winning. Because it should be us looking at the billionaire saying, wait, when is enough enough?
Why can't you kick in your fair share?
Why can't you just comfortably live on $100 million? Why do you need $10 billion? And even if you did, why can't you say kick in 0.5% more to Medicare or I'm sorry, to Social Security? Why does having a small tax increase for you mean the absolute devastation of your life and legacy? And maybe, I'm sorry, your grandkids 10 times down the lineage will have to maybe, I don't know, get a job. Why is that not enough for you? I mean, I have to assume, and that was something I wanted to ask Chuck Collins, is that having that kind of money, whether you are born into it or whether you get it, has to rework the chemistry in your brain. Because at some point, you have to say, oh, this is enough, but it never seems to be enough. And in order to keep it where they are and to get more power, they have to then change the narrative saying, Jane, that guy down the street, he's not like you. You work hard.
He doesn't.
He gets benefits.
Right.
Why does he get benefits? And then when we make the benefits go away, it doesn't help you at all, Jane. In fact, if you need benefits, they're going to be gone. That guy who told you about them, though, will get those benefits in the form of tax breaks and get more money
because they need it.
Because enough is never enough to these people.
Yeah. Greg referenced Chuck Collins, who was here earlier this week. He is one of the co-founders of Patriotic Millionaires, who believes wealthy people should pay more to help out America. I would encourage you to go back and listen to our interview with him. He was with us on Tuesday.
He was on Tuesday, and here's a great chance to plug what we have a best of episode that comes out every Saturday. It's an hour long, about 45. It contains our favorite four segments of the show. I did include Chuck Collins' interview in that. So you can go to civicmedia.us/shows, and it will come out on Saturday. It's a nice distillation of the week. It will include maybe the retirement announcement of Jane Mattenair as well, and a great segment from Terry Barr her slice of Wisconsin. Yep. But yeah, go to civicmedia.us/shows, go to Matinee on Air and find Best Of. That'll come out on Saturday afternoon, I believe. And you can listen to that interview with Chuck Collins. We want to have him back
before you retire,
but yeah. Also just because it's a great discussion, because when rich people talk about rich people, it's a very interesting conversation, specifically when they want to, when those rich people want the rich people to pay more taxes.
Tony on the live stream gets the last word. You want someone with $1 billion to live with just 900 million? Oh, the humanity.
Send me to jail.
I know, Tony, it's terrible. We have news coming up next. Jim Santel joining us on the other side. We'll see what else we can break. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Galby on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream. Good morning, live stream.
Hello, live
on
stream.
On Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He joins us every Thursday to break down all things legal, and there's a lot. Jim Santel is the host of Amicus, a law review across Civic Media on Saturday mornings, 9 to 11. Check it out. It's fantastic. Jim Santel is here. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Jane, great to be back with you once again. On a day after the Supreme Court was talking all about pastry yesterday, did you know this? During the course of 3 hours, an exchange about what donut holes mean and communication between the two judges, Brett Kavanaugh eventually saying, oh, that's a good one. I have to write that down. So that's the
serious. Are you serious right now?
I am not making that up. I'll give you the specific reference here. You've got the Justice Brett Kavanaugh asking about whether this particular statute applies and whether the president should have authority. And the attorney who's representing the state of Oregon, who's once again opposed to these tariffs, says it's not a donut hole, Justice. It's a different kind of pastry. And that gets picked up by our Solicitor General in his rebuttal. So a high level of review. It is sort of tongue-in-cheek in an otherwise very serious argument.
Nice to know that they can still take a little time to yuck things up a little bit, exactly, to break up their day. Exactly.
That's why, James, right? Jim, the next time you go in front of the Supreme Court, you've got to say, this case is too important. There's a lot of details. It's the entire pretzel, not a bite. And then you can get a pretzel, right? And then you can yuck it up and be like, ha ha, wackety schmackety. I mean, I thought you were kidding when you said that. But also, we've seen our leaders do that where they're talking about very important things and then get sidelined by lunch.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Right. Right. Are you going to eat that sandwich?
By the way? Right.
That sort of thing. Right?
I found this on Twitter, going back to the Oregon Attorney General. This is what he said after that hearing yesterday. The Solicitor General looked Justice Roberts squarely in the eyes and said the American people, not foreign countries, are going to pay 30% to 80% of these tariffs. And then he had the gall to look at all those justices again and say, these are not taxes on the American people. Right. So which is it?
And that animated a lot of the discussion yesterday. And you had people like Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, and arguably even some of the other justices on the other side of the bench, pushing back on what John Sauer, who, yes, indeed, he is our Solicitor General, for what it's worth, talking yesterday a million miles an hour.
Seriously.
Requiring the justices on two occasions say, slow down, I can't follow you. That's not good advocacy. For those of us who know what good advocacy looks like, that's not it. But along the way, pushing back on this notion that somehow this is something other than a tax on the American people, he coined this new phrase, which is, this is all foreign-facing. It's a foreign-facing concept that the president has adopted here. And because it's related to things overseas, and the president, therefore, is involved with foreign things as a result of his being the commander-in-chief, therefore, this is all okay. Nothing more to see here. It's foreign-facing, Jane. And so simply adopt this as the appropriate way to understand what our president has done.
But that makes sense. Well, one, I understand where they're coming from, the term foreign-facing. I hear that now. Blank, yes. Facing being used, right, in many versions of corporate speak.
Yes.
But let me ask you a question. And I'm not a lawyer. I am merely lawyer adjacent, as Jane is, as Calvin is. Can he defend the sentence, these are not taxes, on a basis that whether they're passed along? I'm talking about the technicality of the word taxes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If we're paying for the tariffs and those costs are being passed on to us as the consumers, and I'm because the way they talk about things, as far as like they get real technical in the weeds. If it's not right. Technically a tax versus a fee or an added cost, they can go, see, we didn't call it that. We called it a tax, and it's not a tax. You're wrong. We're right. You know what I mean?
But it's a lot of playing with semantics.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to get at, is by him saying that it's not a tax, can he defend it on the semantic point of it all, saying, well, I call it a tax. You call it something else. That's not my problem.
He did give a shot at that, not successful, frankly, among any of the justices yesterday. And to your appropriate invocation of the word semantics, a huge amount of talk about what words mean, what they don't mean under this particular statute, under other statutes. At one point, they were talking about 9 different variations on things like regulate and restrict and control and what all that means. And this is a long part of the discussion yesterday. So semantics loom large. I think in the end, the majority of the Supreme Court, again, this is reading the tea leaves as we are all doing now, not going to be so much interested in that particular semantic gymnastic thing that our Solicitor General was doing, but rather saying, okay, the Constitution says that this is a congressional operation. This is a congressional duty. And Elena Kagan begins that within 5 minutes of the oral argument and goes after the Solicitor General. And then this statute, which is the one that the president has invoked, the IEEPA, this is the statute that permits a president under emergency circumstances to impose limited tariffs, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Then they went after that and said, you know what, this is not an emergency. And beyond that, lots of good discussion about things we've talked about on this show before. A thing called the major questions doctrine. And this is the notion that if the president's going to do something that's big and new, reference, for example, Joe Biden's attempt to convey loan forgiveness for students, reference his attempt to do environmental things, the Supreme Court came back and said, that's a major question, and only the Congress can do that. And for that reason, shut Joe Biden down. An awful lot of discussion yesterday about whether that this is another invocation of that, contrary to the president's view. If this is a major thing the president is doing, imposing tariffs around the world on countries, that's a major question, and the Congress should only the only ones doing it. And oh, by the way, James Madison said exactly that. It's the legislature that does this, not the president. It's a big case about executive powers beyond just these tariffs. And again, the initial indication is that maybe, just maybe, there are enough justices to look at all this and say, we're not buying it, Mr. President. We're not buying this, Mr. Sauer. And if so, hang on. You were talking before in your prior segments, of course, about economic news, all important. What do you do then if on January 1 or February 1, the Supreme Court comes back and says the last 9, 10, 11 months have been based upon all of this? What do we do economically? Not a time to be employed by the Department of Treasury that has to figure out a way to refund all of
all
this
that, somehow? Those tariffs. Yeah.
To American public, foreign countries. What does that look like?
Yeah.
And it's got a big consequence. But again, the Supreme Court should be concerned about that. John Sauer talked about it. But their issue is authority. Does the president have authority to do this? And my takeaway on it, and I think most people who are listening to this had the sense that you had the Amy Coney Barretts and the Neil Gorsuches, maybe in a good moment, Kavanaughs who were saying, I don't think so. And the word skeptical is used a lot. I think it's more than skepticism the Supreme Court has. I think they're wrestling with this big time and may indeed issue a major opinion for the first time in recent years, limiting the power of the presidency and this president in particular from doing what he wants to do.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Aaron Air, we are talking to Jim Santel, who is not only the host of Amicus, a law review on every Saturday from 9 to 11, but he's also a former U.S. attorney, worked under five presidents, Republican, Democrat, also currently practicing attorney. We are talking about the Supreme Court hearing oral arguments on the power of the president to levy tariffs. And it seems, as I've seen in the news stories, that it's sort of going the way where the court is not that convinced on the power, the argument that the president can levy tariffs without Congress, who Congress is supposed to be doing that. And the question I have then is, let's say if you're looking at the tea leaves correctly, and we look at next year, a decision comes down that says a, you know, 6-3 in favor of, not in favor of the president. That speaks to the fact it felt like this Supreme Court was put in place, and John Roberts almost was kind of admitting it out loud that they are going to work to give him the most authority of any executive in the history of this country. That's not only going to be a major blow, but it's going to kind of put his administration in a place of, well, what can we even do next then? Because we'll be right back in the courts.
Right. We know that on July 1 of 2024, this Supreme Court, John Roberts at his pen, wrote this major opinion saying, among other things, that presidents are not above the law, that, oh, by the way, you can't, you that are, they are above the law, yes. rather, mm-hmm. and you can, in fact, can prosecute them. But along the way also said exactly that, Greg, that the presidents have got to be powerful and muscular and deft and quick and decisive and can't be entangled with things like, oh, criminal conduct, including things that otherwise we wouldn't think within the purview or ambit of a president. This, if it goes in the opposite direction, this is a big one. And maybe, just maybe, and you got Neil Gorsuch yesterday sort of backtracking on the opinion that he signed off on yes. July 1, basically saying, well, what about the powers of the presidency? Is this not so much? And it may well be, maybe, just maybe, the Supreme Court is rethinking some of that language given to any president. And here's the time in which they draw the line, not just in the sand, but in the quick drying cement.
Yeah, I thought Neil Gorsuch asked some pretty interesting yeah. and pretty pointed questions, especially when, because Donald Trump's whole contention is that he needed to impose these tariffs because of national security, right? That's the whole right. that's the whole explanation for why he needs this power.
It's an emergency,
it's an emergency,
Jane. It's an emergency
exactly.
under the statute, right? And fentanyl's coming into the country, right?
And Gorsuch essentially said, well, what if another president comes in and yes. says that climate change is yep. an emergency and therefore I need to take action and punish, you know, gas-powered right. engines.
Yeah.
Right, right, exactly. As again, Joe Biden and a couple of initiatives, remember the initiative that he brought forth and saying that the Midwestern states polluting the Eastern states, Supreme Court came back and said, can't do that. That's too big. That's too new. Only the Congress can do that. Well, again, as you just said, Jane, Neil Gorsuch saying it's a major question. How does this differ? And isn't it even bigger than that, arguably, or at least to the same plane? I think there may indeed be as many as 7 votes in this Supreme Court. This
Whoa.
Could be 7-2.
That would
right?
be huge.
Which would be a huge statement.
I think,
the only thing I'll add very quickly mm-hmm. is we know that the Supreme Court has gone in the opposite direction before. John Sauer was the one, again, arguing yesterday as the Solicitor General. Supreme Court has surprised us in the past when all of us have said, no. Presidents have got to be subject to the law. And they come back with this major decision saying, nope. So even after the argument has suggested otherwise, we can't know until they issue that opinion.
We're going to continue our conversation with Jim Santel. I just want to say one thing. There's a good reason I am not ever in courtrooms when these kinds of hearings are going on, because I would stand up and go, come on. Are you guys kidding me? Yes.
Ma'am, stop right. swearing in my courtroom.
You guys are nuts. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air. We will be right back with Jim Santel.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning and welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach. Our one, our only Calzone on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He joins us every Thursday. Our colleague, host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 across the network. Check it out. It's fantastic. Jim Santel is here. Right before we went to the break, Jim, I just shared that I can't control my face when I hear things that I consider BS.
And terrible poker face.
I have a horrible poker face. But again, I admire the self-control of people who sit through these long hearings and not just go roll their eyes. Come on.
Right, right. And again, you should know, Jane, that like lawyers and litigants out there, all of us are thinking those things internally, right?
Right.
We're all thinking, you must be joking, Your Honor. We don't say that out loud because we don't want to be jailed. But the reality is that those things are in our minds. And in fact, Jane, you're channeling Amy Coney Barrett. You may or may not like
we're
that.
So, we are so much alike. Yes. Right? Yeah, right? We're so much alike.
And she looks at, again, John Sauer, once again, our Solicitor General, talking a million miles an hour yesterday to get through his materials, and he is promoting again the notion that these tariffs are just fine. Emergency in place.
Right.
And she says this in the category of, oh, come on. She says, is it your contention, counsel, that every country needed to be tariffed because of the threats to the defense and industrial base? She says, I mean, Spain, France. I mean, I could see it with some countries, but explain to me why as many countries need to be subject to the reciprocal tariff policy as they are. That's Jane Mattenier in the Supreme Court yesterday on the bench saying, oh, come on, counsel.
I would just love to have seen
something real.
I would just love to have seen just a laundry list of various countries. Chad.
Yeah. Right, Papua right. New Guinea.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, good for you, Amy Coney Barrett. If you need coaching, I'm always available. I'll have lots of free time after December 12th.
Remember this moment, folks. It was November 6th, 2025 at 9:54 a.m. where Jane said, good job, Amy Coney Barrett.
Yeah, never thought you'd hear me say that. Yeah. We don't have a lot of time left, and this is getting a little into the weeds, but I do want to focus on this in the remaining minutes that we have, Jim. Lindsey Halligan is the interim U.S. attorney who really is essentially not qualified for the job that Donald Trump has put her into. And they're trying to. Attorney General Pam Bondi claimed to have retroactively appointed Lindsey Halligan as a special attorney and ratified all of her actions to date, including presentations to grand juries. So essentially, time travel is now part of the Trump administration. You can go back in time and retroactively appoint someone.
I got really excited right there, but then I realized what you're talking about.
It's Looney Tunes.
Right. Well, once again, to make their Star Trek reference, it's Captain Picard, right? And let's zip around the sun and go back to the 20th century, right? That or whatever it is, the century that our attorney general is in right now. The reality is that this is an implicit acknowledgement by the Department of Justice that they're in trouble with respect to this appointment. This is an interim appointment. It's based upon this notion that interim appointments, again, very wonky, but yeah. I know you and your listeners love this stuff. You know, 120 days is the term pursuant to which a president can appoint an interim U.S. attorney. That was used up on the previous guy, this fellow who declined to prosecute. They appointed her, and now they're effectively acknowledging by doing this, we got a problem here. What James Comey has done has said, this goes right to the core of the authority of the Department of Justice to prosecute me at all. And because she's got no authority, the indictment that she herself and her office, but principally she herself, presented to the grand jury that she signed off on, that all of this, because of that authority issue, needs to be dismissed.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Attorney General of the United States of America is doing this time travel and appointing her as a special attorney, that'll be the next issue. There are things called special attorneys, again, very wonky. We'll look at whether or not that authorizes you with a complete authorization to act as a United States attorney Maybe, maybe not, but it indicates once again, the Department of Justice realizes it's in trouble. It's also in trouble when a magistrate judge yesterday in the same case says to the government, what is this? Indict now and investigate later.
Yes.
There's some discovery disputes going on. It's a mess. And Jane, it goes back to your concept once again. With due respect, as always said, I don't know insurance. I don't know tax law. I don't know real estate law, but I'm not doing that work. An insurance lawyer, important work, has no business doing this on behalf of the American people and has mucked this up to the point that this is going to go away, maybe even pre-trial, which is stunning in terms of the incompetence, again, at these high levels of the Department of Justice.
This is what you happen when you fire all the qualified people and you surround yourself with people whose only qualification is their loyalty to you. That's how we end up with this.
Yeah. I want to make another point clear is the person she replaced, well, he said he quit. Term said he was fired. But the point, one of the reasons why he's no longer there is he tried for 5 months to try to find evidence against Letitia James, and he found nothing, and he was booted for that, and now it's just a matter of make it happen. That's not how the law works, and if it is, that can come down on all of us one day.
Here's the crime I want her charged with. Now find evidence to make that
Here's my enemy.
Absolutely.
Jim Santel. Jim Santel hosts Amicus, a law review on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Check it out. It is fantastic. We will talk to you in a week. Thanks, Jim.
Jane, Greg, always a pleasure to be with you. Have a great week.
You too. See you next week. Stay with us. News is next on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.